Detective Black not blamed for fighting. The Atlanta Georgian, Wednesday, the 24th of September, 1913, page 5, column 2. Chief Beavers received a letter Tuesday morning from George Boudicker of Birmingham, defending Detective John Black in the latter's recent trouble at Birmingham. Boudicker asserts that Black was not to blame for the fight he had with his prisoner, and declares that the People and Police Department of Birmingham and do not censure the detective. Page 6, column 1, Denton denies luring girls from home, rearrested as kidnapper after release on habeas corpus from charge of suspicion. John L. Denton, the Atlanta contractor who was arrested Tuesday on charges preferred by the parents of two girls he was said to have taken to Birmingham with him, won his fight for liberty in habeas corpus proceedings before Judge Bell at noon Wednesday. But following his release, he immediately was placed under arrest on a warrant charging him with kidnapping Elsie Elliott, his 17-year-old stenographer. The warrant was sworn out by the girl's mother, Mrs. Bertha Elliott, of Route 7, Simpson Street, before Justice of the Peace Girardeau. It was coincident with a warrant sworn in Justice of the Peace Ridley's court a few minutes early by a D's, charging Denton with kidnapping. The name of the person kidnapped was not mentioned in the warrant. It is understood at Eunice, the daughter of D's, however, is the girl who accompanied Elsie Elliott to Birmingham. This warrant was held by Chief of Detectives Newport Lanford, who did not serve it. Bond fixed at $300. Denton's bond was fixed at $300 by Justice Girardeau, and Denton expressed confidence of making it. If the Ridley warrant is served, Attorney Thomas will request the placing of a light bond. When Judge Bell called the habeas corpus hearing, City Attorney Mason announced that a warrant charging Denton with kidnapping had been sworn out a few minutes before and displayed it to the court. Attorney Thomas demanded that the prisoner be granted his liberty, as there was no charge pending against him and the warrant had never been served. Denton has never been notified of any charge against him and no warrant, said Attorney Lewis. He was invited Tuesday morning to coming down to police headquarters, and when he arrived there, they placed him under arrest, and he has been held there since. Well, I don't see that it make any difference if I turn him loose under this habeas corpus, for if I do, he can be rearrested in half a minute, said Judge Bell. Bailiff serves warrant. Chief of Detectives Lanford walked over to Denton and said, "Come on, we will go on over to the justice court," then turned and walked to the end of the courtroom where Bertha Elliott was seated. After talking with her a moment, they left the courtroom and went to Justice Girardeau's court, where the warrant against Denton charging him with kidnapping Elsie Elliott was sworn out. Denton remained by the side of his lawyer until after the order granting him his release was read. City Attorney Mason and Chief Beavers started from the courtroom, and Thomas approached Beavers.
"Chief, we are ready to go where you want us to," said Thomas.
"I have nothing to do with it," replied the chief.
"Well, you know where you can find us when you want to," said Thomas.
Thomas and Denton walked up Prior Street to the Equitable Building. Just before reaching there, a bailiff from Justice Girardeau's court overtook them and served the warrant upon Denton. Page 7, Column 1, Chief, at end of first year of vice war, sees big benefits done. City Wednesday marked the first anniversary of Atlanta's great moral tidal wave. It was on this date 1 year ago that Police Chief Beavers startled the South by the issuance of his famous order that swept away Atlanta's tenderloin and started a relentless war on vice that has been waged unceasingly by the chief since. Atlanta today is the cleanest city in the whole United States. There is not one recognized house of vice in the city, nor one disorderly house known to the police. Disorders have shown a remarkable decrease. The closing of the district has been a wonderful success, and the whole city has been benefited. That is the way Chief Beavers Wednesday morning heartily expressed his first anniversary satisfaction. As Chief views move, he declared that the year just passed clearly shows three things: that it is possible to close the Tenderloin District, that the closing of the district in Atlanta for 1 year means that the movement is an unqualified success, that the houses of vice in Atlanta are closed for good. No matter whether I am chief of police or who is chief, open and recognized vice never again will be tolerated in this city, was his confident assertion.
The people of Atlanta will never consent to a return to old conditions. They know the new order of things is the better. The chief said that immediately after he had closed the district, he was assured by citizens that if he could keep it closed for 1 year, he would do the city a wonderful good that could come in no other way. Some of these, he said, were skeptical and really didn't believe the houses could be kept close for this period, but felt sure that 1 year would prove the success or failure of the movement. Various figures were advanced, he said, as to the length of time before the houses would reopen, some named 8 months, others 4 or 5 months, and some even 1 month. I have never had a doubt but that they were closed for all time, because I know the people of Atlanta want a clean city, said the chief. City has benefited, he says. He expressed himself as greatly pleased with the general results of the vice war. He said, I know that Atlanta has been benefited, and even though I should never do another thing for the city, I feel that my 24 years' service as a policeman and as chief of police has not been in vain. Atlanta now is successfully rid of an evil that for years and years has contaminated and polluted its young and poisoned its entire system, and henceforth it will move forward with greater vim and longer strides. It is no longer a municipal slave to commercialized vice. The closing of the houses has rid Atlanta of an undesirable and vicious element, and hence crimes and disorders have decreased. Not only this, but the power of the infamous ring that thrived on the shame of women at last has been broken forever. The day of the blood money shark in Atlanta has passed. Atlanta today is the cleanest city in the United States and will keep that honored position. Other cities are realizing the importance of wiping out vice, and the movement is becoming general. Sees spread of vice war. It is but a matter of time until recognized vice will be unknown in the United States. This condition is certain to come. Atlanta has prospered in the first year of the new order of things, and it will continue to grow better and more prosperous as the years pass. Chief Beavers received a request Tuesday afternoon from Cleveland, Ohio, newspaper for his photograph. Along with the information that a movement to suppress vice in that city has been started, and that the success of the crusade here is to be recited at length in the newspapers as an aid. Page 9, Column 3. Leo Frank again made head of B'nai B'rith. Condemned man retains presidency of charitable order. Manages factory from cell. Leo M. Frank, under sentence of death for the killing of Mary Fagan, has been unanimously re-elected president of the Jewish Order of B'nai B'rith. Other prominent Atlantans selected to fill the more important offices are Arthur Heyman of the law firm of Dorsey, Brewster, Howell and Heyman, vice president, Milton Klein, monitor, Dr. B. Weldauer, treasurer, and B. Kaufman, warden, Sam P. Kronheim, secretary, will retain his office until the January elections. Although Frank was in the prison tower under sentence of death at the time of the elections in the order, this did not deter his associates from again placing the fortunes of the organization, which is charitable in purpose, in the hands of the young pencil factory superintendent. Still runs factory. The re-election of Frank followed the announcement that the condemned man had been continued in the service of the pencil factory as the superintendent, which position he occupied when the murder of Mary Fagan was committed. For several weeks, he has directed the affairs of the pencil factory from his cell in the jail. Those who are in close touch with him say he has every detail of the business at his fingers' tips, and that he handles the affairs as if he were back at the desk in the little office. Frank probably will continue as president of the B'nai B'rith as well as superintendent of the pencil factory for many months, regardless of the success of the fight for his life. For present indications point to a fight in the courts unparalleled in the annals of legal procedure in Georgia. Hearing may be delayed. The hearing for a new trial on October 4th, just 6 days before Frank is sentenced to hang, probably will be postponed for several weeks so that Solicitor General Hugh Dorsey may prepare his answer. The B'nai B'rith also honored Leonard Haas of the law firm of Haas & Haas, president of the District Grand Lodge, which includes the states of Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Florida, and Georgia. Mr. Haas and Mr. Klein are considered among the leading men in the organization in the South. Page 10, Column 7.
Sheriff C.W. Mangum makes announcement to the citizens of Fulton County. Now that the wave of excitement and heat of passion incident to the Leo Frank trial has in a measure subsided, I deem it advisable to address a few words to the voters and the people of the county relative to the many baseless, unfounded, and unfair rumors which have been circulated about my treatment of the county's prisoner, Leo M. Frank. These rumors, many of which are too unreasonable to be dignified with a reply or denial, have largely originated with my personal and political enemies solely for political purposes, but they have been given such wide and such ingenious circulation that I consider this statement necessary, not as a justification of anything which I have done, but in order that those who have listened to these rumors may understand the true facts in the case. In order that the good citizens of the county will not be misled by false statements originating with a few men who, for gain or spite, are willing to attack a man for the simple performance of his duty. It has been said that I announced that I believe Frank innocent of the charge against him. This I emphatically deny. I have never made a statement of my personal belief in the case, but have only quoted the prisoner, when I was requested to do so, as saying himself that he was innocent. C.W. Mangum, Sheriff Fulton County. During the trial, I was criticized because I failed to handcuff Frank when he was carried from the jail to the courthouse during his trial. My enemies say that in doing this, I violated the law. In this, they willfully misrepresent or show themselves densely ignorant. The law requires the sheriff simply to safeguard his prisoners, and this I have done. Relative to my failure to handcuff Frank, I say that it has never been the custom of myself or my deputies in our 5 years service to the county to handcuff a prisoner unless it was absolutely necessary, and I take occasion to say that of more than 20 who have been charged with murder during my administration, only 3, George Burge, George Quarles, and Robert Clay, have worn steel cuffs, and these men were known as desperate characters. Bain, Darden, Garner, Reeves, Copeland, Vane, Matthews, McDonald, Parham, Camp, Folds, and many others charged with murder have been allowed to walk to their trials with unmanacled hands. Even Negroes, when there is only one or two to be moved at a time, are not handcuffed unless there is some reason to believe that they will attempt to escape or to do violence to the guard. In other words, whenever it is possible, without running any risk of allowing a prisoner to escape, we spare him the shame of appearing on the streets with manacled hands, be he white or black, Jew or Gentile. Of course, when a large number, often from 20 to 40, prisoners are being brought to court by 2 or 3 deputies, we find it necessary to manacle them in order to prevent their escape, but never when there is only one prisoner, unless he is not only desperate, but of such powerful build that in single combat he might overcome even an armed deputy. Frank is a man of slight stature, a physical weakling. I have also been criticized because I carried Leo Frank to and from jail in an automobile, when other prisoners have walked from the Court of Justice to the place of their incarceration. The reason for the use of the automobile is simple and obvious. There were many threats against the life of the prisoner, and the sheriff's office had received many anonymous communications from people who threatened to lynch Frank. Always there were crowds gathered about the courthouse to see the prisoner, and had I walked him to the jail, he could have been surrounded by people, some of whom might have attempted to do him harm, or in the surrounding crowds there might have been friends who would have sought to liberate him. Necessarily, I had to use an automobile to protect the prisoner and to guard him effectively. Otherwise, every one of my deputies would have had to assist in guarding him, and they were need elsewhere. This machine belongs personally to one of my deputies and did not cost the county 1 cent. My enemies have foolishly declared that I attend the Frank trial very day because of a personal interest in the fortunes of the prisoner, and that I had never before attended constantly on a criminal trial. Not only had threats of violence against the prisoner then freely made, but there were many wild rumors that the Hillsborough affair would be repeated in the Frank case, and that the judge and other court officials were in constant danger. While I did not credit these rumors, I realized that never before had there been such intense feeling, both for and against a prisoner on trial in this county. For that reason and that reason alone, I attended constantly on the trial. Had violence been attempted, I would never have forgiven myself.
and the public would never have forgiven me for allowing my deputies to stand without a leader against a mob, while I, the sheriff of this county, sat safe in my private office, unable to reach the scene of action and the scene of my duty until it was too late to be of any actual assistance to my men. I was there because it was my duty to be there and for no other reason. I have been criticized by many because they could not get seats in the courtroom, and the charge that I showed partiality in this matter has been made. I deny the charge flatly and firmly. I was sorry that every man in the county who had any desire to hear the trial could not do so, but space was very limited. That the courtroom was not large is not my fault, as I have no control over it. I was instructed by the judge, and it is my sworn duty to obey his orders to close the doors when the seats in the room had been filled, and this I did. Doubtless some parties were allowed to pass in and out of the room after the doors had been closed to the general public. But I deny the charge that they were all friends of Frank. They were attorneys, court officers, city detectives, policemen in plain clothes, and in practically all instances their presence in the courtroom was necessary, and they had a right to demand and receive admittance. That the court was filled with men of the same race as the defendant, I also deny. At practically every session, there were 10 Gentiles to every Jew in the room. It has been said that Frank has been allowed privileges at the jail accorded no other prisoner. This is a lie as pitiful as it is base. He has been allowed the same privileges, no more or less, accorded every other prisoner, regardless of his color, race, or creed. Like the officials of the Federal Penitentiary of Atlanta, and like all sincere students of criminology, I believe that as few hardships as possible should be placed upon the man whom the law has restrained of his liberty, and that prisoners should not be made to suffer unnecessary indignities. But I also believe that every prisoner should be accorded the same treatment and discipline, and I can truthfully say that all prisoners in the Fulton County Jail, since it has been in my charge, have been made to conform to the same rules and regulations. Frank has had his meals sent to him from his home. I try to make the fare of the prisoners wholesome and substantial, but it is a rule that any prisoner whose friends or relatives desire to furnish regular meals or special delicacies can receive them. And this rule applies to Negroes as well as white men. If the friends of a prisoner, regardless of whom he is, care to furnish him with books and magazines, he may have them. If a prisoner is to be held for some length of time and has the money to purchase some bit of furniture, which cannot be used as a weapon, to make his cell more comfortable, he can have it. This is a general rule, applicable to every prisoner alike. In the Fulton County Jail, there are not special rules made for one man or set of men. I try to do everything in my power, consistent with the same keeping of the men, to make their stay at the tower at least comfortable. It has been charged that I have shown Frank partiality by allowing his friends and relatives to visit him. In his connection, I wish to say that in this, like everything else, he has been made to conform to the rules of the jail, and his friends and relatives have been allowed to visit here just as the friends and relatives of every other prisoner have been allowed to visit the tower. If a prisoner does not desire to receive visitors, I comply with his wishes in the matter. I have been condemned by some because I refuse to allow city detectives to question Frank over his protest. I want to say here and now, with all emphasis at my command, that I have never knowingly allowed a prisoner in the tour to be put through the third degree by anybody, and I never will so long as I hold office. I thus throw down the gauntlet. Let him take it up, who will be he chief, captain, or private. That my position in this matter is right is shown by the fact that only recently the Court of Appeals of this state has handed down a decision condemning the third degree and declaring evidence secured by means of it is valueless in a courtroom. In connection with my administration of the jail, those who are familiar with conditions have declared the work of myself and deputies as remarkably efficient. This is largely due to the fact that all of the deputies on duty there work only 8 hours per day instead of 12 hours as under former administrations. While this requires more men and curtails the amount of money which I personally derive from the office, the result has made me glad that I have adopted this policy, and I have the knowledge that more working men, laboring conscientiously 8 hours a day, are sharing in the revenue of this office now than ever before.
The rumors about the sheriff which were current during the Frank trial are too numerous to mention in full. I did not try to deny them then, when passion and prejudice was at its height, but now in order that no part of the public may ebb misled by false rumors, I make this statement and clearly and emphatically state he has not received more privileges than other prisoners, but in some cases not as many. My record is clean and clear. I have tried to do my full duty at all times, and nothing but my duty. If the good people of Fulton County think that I am wrong in treating all prisoners decently and humanely, or in refusing to allow them to be subjected to the third degree or other indignities, I am willing to stand by their verdict and accept without rancor defeat at the coming primaries. However, I may add that I am fully confident of re-election to the high office I now hold, the duties of which I have done my utmost to discharge without fear, favor, or affection. In the past, I have been supported by an earnest and conscientious corps of deputies, and if there are any changes made in their personnel, the public may rest assured that it will be done for the public good and not for political effect. As above indicated, I am a candidate for re-election as sheriff of Fulton County, looking backward to a clean and honorable record, going forward with full confidence that the good people of Fulton County are not yet ready to rebuke and cashier a man for doing his sworn and bonded duty. With thankfulness in my heart for past support, and with a consciousness of duty done, I earnestly solicit your support and influence in the next primary. Very respectfully yours, C.W. Mangum, September 20th, 1913. Advocate.